Dante arrives in Purgatory. On the lowest terraces of Mount Purgatory, it's a mountain, Dante and Virgil talk with some repentant, excommunicate souls. Souls who simply delayed repentance for their earthly sins until the last moment, just a little bit too late. And others who, because they died violently, had no opportunity to repent. All these souls either willfully separated themselves from the Catholic Church while living or failed to attend to their spiritual condition in a timely manner. So they must have long years in purgatory before starting the penitential climb. As they continue, Virgil and Dante, so Virgil is his accompaniment through the Divine Comedy, they encounter poet Sordello, who lived a bit before Dante's time. And Sordello questions Virgil, his literary hero, about life in limbo, which is the level of hell where virtuous yet unbaptized people dwell. And he also explains the nighttime law of purgatory, whereby no one can climb in the sun's absence. And the next morning, Dante wakes up and he's carried to purgatory's gate. And Virgil and he are admitted by an angel. And they're marked with 7 P's on Dante's forehead with the point of a sword. They stand for the 7 capital sins that the souls in purgatory strive to cleanse. And the scars will be erased as he climbs the mountain and gets through the stages of purgatory, hopefully to paradise. So that's how it all begins. It's not too cheerful on the whole. But here we have the 7 deadly sins. So an obvious question, what are the 7 deadly sins? Anybody care to stand up and tell me them? Great. Do it. Woo. Just hang on a minute. Let me check. So just take a moment to think over the last week. Did we hear those? Let me find them. I've lost them now. I've lost my space. Lust, gluttony, greed, sloth, rampage, envy, and pride. So lust, gluttony, greed, sloth. Oh, sloth, I love that word. Envy and pride. So just think over the last week, which of those have you achieved? This wasn't intended to be funny. But it's a helpful list, isn't it? It's a helpful list. The main event in purgatory is prayer. So you may recall in the history of the church that glorious thing called indulgences, where you could purchase additional prayers from the church, but also the understandable hope that we all have praying for somebody who's departed. So the idea is that you can pray your way out of purgatory. So Dante was 1265 to 1321, the 13th and 14th centuries. How is it that this seemingly parody, but brought in a story that is deep in the heart of everybody, the idea of hell, of being permanently in hell, and perhaps in this place where you can pray your way out of it. Does anybody know, incidentally, in hell, what offence was the worst section of hell held for? Fraud. I don't know whether it's just me, but I can think of quite a few people these days. Quite a few people who might find that spot a bit uncomfortable. But how did Christianity get there? Richard Rohr, the Franciscan priest and the founder of the Center for Contemplation Action, writes it this way. There are a number of fathers in the early church, the first 4 centuries, who believed in apokatastasis, universal restoration. That's from Acts 3:21. They believed that the real meaning of resurrection of Christ was that God's love was so perfect and so victorious that it would finally win out in every single person's life. They were so sure about this that their thought partially gave rise to the mythology of purgatory as a place. In the dying process or shortly after death, God's infinite love can and will still get you. They felt that no soul could resist such a love once it was revealed to them. Most Catholics forgot that the original folk belief in purgatory represented an overwhelming sense of God's always victorious love and mercy. Like many great mysteries, it deteriorated into the exact opposite, a place of punishment, which is all a worldview of scarcity can provide. I'm just going to repeat that somewhat cheerless phrase. A place of punishment, which is all a worldview of scarcity can provide. So I ask again, how did we get here? Funnily enough, I haven't got all the answers, but as always with the Unitarian pulpit, I offer some thoughts and you can choose to do something with them or not. Saint Augustine (354 to 430), famous for a lot of writing and a founding father of much theology, but also the offerer of the doctrine of original sin. I think purgatory and hell have a lot to do with the relationship with things that we know aren't good for us. And I really struggle. I struggle with saints in general. It doesn't mean I struggle with saints in particular, but I do struggle with the concept. I don't know whether anybody's the same way. And Saint Augustine, of course, he converted, he was baptized at 35, 36, something like that. After 15 years ignoring his family and effectively living the life of, you know, whatever description that was, there are various descriptions that are really unpleasant and others that just said he was a Jack the Lad, for want of a better description. And he heard somebody reading the Bible and he converted. And then sometime after that, the doctrine of original sin arrived. And that has been a really difficult thing, I think, for all of us who've been brought up in Christian cultures, to sit with that. And I find it even more difficult when you leave the right history to simply say, I was born with original sin, and now I've been forgiven, or I believe in Jesus and I'm forgiven. I think it's much harder for all of us to work with that we've not done well and acknowledge what we've not done well. And for me, that is the message of Dante's Purgatory. It is a reminder that whatever it is, we have to work with it. Prayer is what is used in Dante, but it can be all sorts of things in our lives. The first deadly sin, by the way, lust, isn't simply obsessive or excessive thoughts of desires. Dante's view was that it was excessive love of others or other things that put your devotion to God secondary. And I think that's a really helpful description, actually, because if we put our devotion to doing the next right thing, if we put our devotion to seeking the opportunity to help a starfish back into the ocean, if we fail to recognize the helpfulness that our actions may produce with other people, we are stepping away from God. Well, need to try and make this a bit more hopeful, don't you think? The history of this seems to fit with a lovely quote from Fintan O'Toole's book, We Don't Know Ourselves. In the hurry through which known and strange things pass, the strange things were sometimes very well known, and the known things were often deeply strange. Fintan, of course, is writing about his understanding of life in Ireland, but having been brought up in a Christian culture and high church Anglican myself, that phrase sits there. Strange things were sometimes very well known. Hell and purgatory are well known to us all. And the known things were often seen deeply strange. Yuval Harari's book that has turned up this year, I don't know, quite a few of you will have read Sapiens or Homo Deus, perhaps, or you'll have heard of them. And his new book, Nexus, A Brief History of Information, Networks from the Stone Age to Artificial Intelligence, has a great summary of a lot of his work in Homo Deus, talking about the story of Christianity and what a powerful story Christianity was and still is, and other religions too. And it reminds us that the story that is communicated means that we can speak to people all over the world with an understanding that sits with them and with us of the stories of Christianity. Everything to do with, you know, the Easter week and the story of Jesus. But there are many, many more stories that we can immediately sit with people that we've never met before. And so his description of information networks is describing Christianity as their most amazing information network. He then, in the first half of the book, spends a lot of time talking about democracy and autocracy and self-correcting mechanisms. So the difference between the two is the level of self-correcting mechanism. What self-correcting mechanism is happening? And I think both of those feed really helpfully into any interpretation or dance with Dante's Purgatory, because it is a foundational story that he was talking about, understanding that we may go to hell and why that would be. But it was also a need to correct, and the correcting mechanisms that Dante was referring to was for ourselves to pray and correct. And if purgatory does exist, I think I'd rather be praying and correcting here and now. You can see parallels to this with Buddhism's The Four Nutriments I first came across reading a Thich Nhat Hanh book, his book on silence, actually. If you fancy a book on silence, it's wonderful. And they are edible food, sense impressions, volition, so your will, what you do with your will, and then your consciousness, both individual and collective. And if you take those last two, your will and your consciousness, both individual and collective, again, you can get the sense of how important it is on those supposed cardinal sins that we need to work with ourselves to be the best and the most useful that we can be. Because our will does act in the world. So if our will chooses to act badly, it's not going to feel good, probably for you, but certainly for a lot of other people. There is a great sense of volition around the world at the moment. There is a sense of will that's coming that's going to be different next year. We will see. And the same applies to consciousness and collective consciousness. We need to feed into the good stuff. I brought up the idea of sainthood in the context of today's address, because although, as I said at the start, I'm not wildly keen on the idea of sainthood, on the other hand, I am quite keen on the idea that there ought to be saints, that there are people who just do so much good, whether it's through the way that they produce their art or the good work they do. We know that they are everywhere in the world. We had a reading around on Nelson Mandela. You know, no better example of an amazing person. You were given three different things to reflect on in the standing reflection. I thought that I'd bring them up again just to check that you were listening at the time. But Lao Tzu, it's never filled up. You know, whatever it is that is our spiritual connection, our desire to do something useful, to throw another starfish, it's never used up. You can keep going. There is always another starfish. And the Bhagavad Gita was a reminder that actually there is a need, if you understand God in that way, to come back and to remind us what is righteous and what is good. But it's the Richard Rohr quote that touches me the most. Spiritual growth is mainly in seeing. That's from a book called Falling Upward. Some of you may have read. It's a short book, and it's about the two halves of life, the striving and becoming a young adult and family, and then you get to a point where you then are looking towards the end of your life, but you fall upwards. You see deeply more. If you are able to fall upwards in the way that Richard Rohr explains, I think you're safe on the purgatory front. I think you're safe. And I think it's incumbent on us all to try and find a bit of hope in the strangest of places. And for me this year, that was Kilkenny. I'm not suggesting that Kilkenny is a strange place, by the way. But there is a festival there, Kilkenomics, Economics and Comedy, which I have been going to for a number of years. And it took place just after the American election. And I actually came away quite heartened, if you can be, having 3 days listening to economists, about the fact that they were all pretty resolute that the financial system was going to actually do a lot to change the outcome of next year, despite the fact that we're all a little nervous about what may happen. I don't know whether that will be true, but it gave me some hope. And I do feel that it's good to find hope even in the strangest of places. A place of punishment is all a world view of scarcity can provide. Dante's purgatory reminds me of the work that I must do on myself, the prayer that I try to be in the world, to allow the opportunity for hope to flourish.